So the basic question is, which I ask myself, is how come there are no books in all of Jewish history, there are no books about Shalom Bayis? You look in the Gemara, they talk a lot about Hilchas Shabbos, every little detail, about Hilchas Tefillin, about Hilchas this, about Hilchas that, Kachim, Taras, nothing about Shalom Bayis. You go to the Rishonim, no books about Shalom Bayis. You go to the Acharonim, no. Today, you go to the bookstore, you find 1,000 of them. Why? Because they sell, and we live in a capitalistic society. So somebody makes make a buck, so you write a good book. But how come throughout history there are no books? I'm saying this is the most important topic in the world. The most important topic is we should have good homes. If you don't have good homes, you don't have good Jewish people. You don't have good, what's the problem in Harlem? What's the problem in Harlem? The problem in Harlem is they don't grow up in good homes. They grow up the way they grow up. It's not their fault. If they would have mommy and a daddy, and they knew both of them were, and they were living together, and they had a happy home, and it was a strong home, and they had good children, and the father went to work every day, and the mother took care of the house, and they had strong family units, then they'd get out of that misery. But they don't have strong families, and there's a lot of, you know, silly stuff going on, so they just perpetuate it. Marriage is like the basis for the entire nation. That's without the Jew. This is the Shekhinah Shorah, because there's no books about marriage. How come there are no books about marriage? What do you say, Shaya?
Because there's nothing to argue about.
No, but how to do it? How to have a good home? Mm-hmm. How to treat your wife? How to treat your husband?
Was
there
an issue?
Well,
I think years ago.
It was never an issue. How to treat your wife? How to treat your husband?
It was a given.
I guess back then they were so from that the men didn't speak to the women, even if they were married. What? What's that? There's no set way to do it. What do you say, Asher? The answer is that the entire Tanakh, the entire Gemara, Mishnah, every single thing about Ben Adam L'Chavero is first and foremost about how to treat your wife. So the question was, why isn't there? The answer is, of course there is. It doesn't have to say your wife. It says in the Torah, there's an Isser Doraisa to cause anybody any amount of emotional pain. So first and foremost, that goes to your wife. Because she's at a disadvantage. What's her disadvantage? She's a girl. So that means she's very sensitive. She's very sensitive. So therefore, when the Torah says that you're not allowed to cause anybody any pain, first and foremost, it's talking about her. And when the Torah says, V'ahavta l'recha kamocha, what does the Gemara say in Kiddushin? Who's that talking about? Your wife. So who does V'ahavta l'recha kamocha start with? First and foremost, your wife. So that's pretty basic. And every single halach of Ben Adam L'Chavero is referring, first and foremost, that's where it begins. It begins in the house, and then it extends. So the truth is, you don't need Shiurim on Shalom Bayis so much. No, nobody needs it. You know what you need? What everybody needs, in my humble opinion. It's like people say, my humble opinion, and then they're always expressing it. If it was so humble, then probably you wouldn't want to say it, because it's so humble. That's just a humble way of saying, in my opinion. I don't think it's not my humble opinion. I believe it very strongly. And that is, it's called my arrogant opinion. In my arrogant opinion, all you need is Musar. Musar. What is Musar? People hear that word, all of a sudden they get nervous. They think it's somebody getting up there and saying how rotten they are. Musar is that you systematically and persistently work on your character day in and day out. Minute in and minute out. That's my fantasy. People fantasize about different things. Some people fantasize about, you know, the Mets winning another World Series, or other people fantasize about eating a fudge sundae by a pool, right? My fantasy is finding one chaver in the yeshiva, one chaver who systematically says to me, I want to spend the whole year working together on midos. We'll be together. One, if there were two, it would be better. If there were three, it would be better. There's always the kol haram. Just I want to work on it, not just to come to a shir here and there and hear something interesting. Something systematic where you work day in and day out on your midos, and what it means to be Baal Chesed, what it means to control taivas, what it means to be sensitive, what it means kavod, running after kavod, avoiding kavod, how we relate to kavod, what kavod is, what it means, all the different midos, the countless midos, and you work on them one by one, and in general, Chazon Ish says you have to knock them all at once, and there's no individual midos, you just say, I want to be a complete tzaddik. Basically, in a sense, that's what the Chazon Ish says, and then everything falls into place. And the Bali Musar, they broke it down into smaller parts and worked on individual midos. But you don't have to do it with Ali Erman, I'm sure you can find somebody better. But somebody who really takes upon themselves, I am becoming a better person every day, and here's the plan. And you get the Sfarim, you have Mesilas Yesharim, and you read Mesilas Yesharim once, twice, three times, four times, and you read Chovas HaLevavos, or Avigdor Miller read Chovas HaLevavos over 500 times. Over 500 times he read it. He knew it like Ashrei, probably. and you read it again and again and again, even though he says things you know, you're medayik and you're mamik, and you go deeper and deeper and deeper. And every time you walk down the street, we would have a musr vibe. I'd go to each person and I'd say, what musr did you learn today on the street? What musr? You were on the bus, you were at the meal table. What musr insight did you have? The person who's thinking about it has musr insights all the time. And when I first came to yeshiva 23 years ago, so I went to a yeshiva which was a branch of Chafetz Chaim, was called Or David. It's actually still called Or David. So it was a branch of Chafetz Chaim. And I'll be honest with you, in that year, I learned nothing. 2 years. Shana Aleph and Shana Bet, I barely learned anything. I remember in Shana Aleph, I read through most of Maseches Brachos, making sure not to do it more than one time, because I was afraid if I did it more than one time, I might remember it. And that was a little too much for me to handle. So I just read through a little bit. You know, I didn't hold the morning Seder, afternoon Seder was Suffolk, maybe, and then night Seder I liked. And then the second year also I didn't learn. But one thing I got from there, and that's really the one yeshiva in the world that I'm aware of today that takes musr seriously, is Chafetz Chaim. For them, and they told me, when I went to Shana Gimel, they told me to go to Chafetz Chaim, but the Chafetz Chaim, they learn very slow, and they learn Gemara. There's an old joke that they don't get out of the box till Hanukkah. Meaning, you know, the first word of the Masechta is in a box. So the joke goes, they don't get out of the box till Hanukkah. And then, you know, somebody goes to Chafetz Chaim boy and he says, what daf are you up to? And he says, I'm up to daf Gimel Amid Beis. He says, Gimel Amid Beis and it's already Purim? He says, what can we do? We skip the first daf. Right? So they went slowly. So I didn't end up going to the yeshiva. But that was the one yeshiva. For them, the primary focus of the yeshiva was Musa. And they learned Gemara. And like I said, they learned it. I once said to one of my rabbis, yeah, but they learned slowly. He goes, they don't learn slowly. They learn in depth. You know what I mean? Because he took it as an insult, so he just turned it around. They learned in depth, which is Beseder Gemara, I'm all for in depth. So I was never zochet to learn in yeshiva, but I remember the boys were tremendous mention. The boys in the yeshiva, I don't know what it's like anymore. And I had a friend who went to a Chafetz Chaim high school, and he said that's what the high school was like. That since there was such a stress on mitos and on character improvement, the boys were mentioned. Were they the best learners in the world? I don't know. But I don't really think it matters, because that's not the ikkar of life. The ikkar of life is not, you know, who can say do acrobatics and answer the Rashba's Kasha, which is phenomenal to be able to answer the Rashba's Kasha. But ultimately, it's to become a human being. It's to become a person. And you do that by learning Musar and working on your mitos. And that for you is everything. So when you get on the bus, what do I say to the bus driver? Do? I tell you guys, when I get on the bus and I see people with yarmulkes, and they put their bag on a chair, on the seat next to them. Right? They didn't pay twice. We'll assume we done them a cup cold. Yeah, they didn't pay for two seats. And even if they did, so it's still marasayin. Okay, and you take up a seat, and people are standing. What does a musr person say? Musr person, how can you? Is your bag tired? There are people standing, and your bag is on a seat. I just don't understand. So when you're walking down the street, you see a million things that you have musr thoughts. You see something, say, oh, this is a mashal for, right? So that is musr. If that's your mindset, then when you're married, that's the way your home is going to be. It's each person always trying to be better, more refined than they were the previous day. And then your marriage is going to be a blissful marriage, because all you want is to perfect your character, and all she wants is to perfect her character. And it's like a daily thing. How can I be better today than I was yesterday? And that, in a word, is musr. And there are very few people who do that. And that's the sad part of life. But you don't need any special. There's no special thing. She's a person. So you treat her like as a person should be treated. So that is as far as Ben Adam L'Chaveira goes. So obviously all of Ben Adam L'Chaveira applies to your wife. And as far as Ben Adam L'Chaveira. And then there's also Ben Adam L'Makom. Even Ben Adam L'Makom applies to marriage. Amuna. So something happens. Let's say, just an example. Let's say you end up with a wife and she's not everything you were looking for. Of course, it's not going to happen to anybody in this room. But it's happened to some people I know. She's not everything you dreamed of. So what do? There are two ways. You can complain. You can try to change her, or you can say, this is what God wants me to have in this world. That's emunah. So when you're learning in the Torah, the number one most fundamental mitzvah, the first mitzvah, the Targum mitzvah in the Rambam, is believing in God. So you believe that God is running the show, and this is the woman who wants you to have, and this is the woman who's going to help you grow. So even the Ben Adam Makom obviously also relate to marriage, and what type of home you have, and your the amount of Kedusha, and your Shemira Seinayim, right? This is Ben Adam L'Makom, it's between you and God, right? But obviously that affects the way you relate to your wife. So really, the whole Torah, everything is first and foremost trying to help you have a holy home, a good home. So therefore, the more you're learning, the more you're learning Musar, and the more you're learning Musar, I said, not only in the books, but the more you're learning Musar from everything in life, and the more you talk about it. You have a question, you have an ethical question. What should I do in this situation? So the more you do that, the better a home you're going to have, and you have to make that your focus. If the more you make it your focus, the better a home you're going to have. So that is, as far as that goes, so really, again, this year is somewhat superfluous, because we're talking about this specific topic, or we can really be talking about any midos in general. Okay. Now, Rav Volba was one of the great Musar teachers, and he had a principle for life. And he said as follows, that if you have good midos, it doesn't matter who you marry. Why? Because you can get along with anybody. You can get along with anybody. She doesn't have to be, you know, the woman that you're necessarily looking for, but you're still going to be nice to her, because she's your wife. And if you're nice to her, she's going to enjoy being your wife. And she's married to you, and then she realizes afterwards, you know, she really could have done better. But if she has good midos, you're going to be happy being married to her, because she's going to be great to you, if she really knows what it means to have good midos. But maybe, I mean, we've already discussed it a little bit, we'll discuss it a little bit more, but all you really need is good midos. So a lot of people, at times, they're nervous. Am I marrying the right, if anybody didn't say Shekocho Gvotsa Maleolam, you can say that. Am I marrying, it starts with Baruch HaTashem. Am I going to marry the right girl? Am I marrying my Bashir? Listen, if you're marrying your Bashir, that there was a Baskol that came out 40 days before you were born, and says this was the girl for you, so you're very lucky, you'll never know. You'll never know. Maybe you go to Rabbi David Abuchatzeri, he'll tell you, but you won't really know. But it doesn't matter. Why doesn't it matter? Because if you needed to know, God would have told you. What do you need to know? You need to know that if you're good to her, and she's good to you, you'll have a happy marriage, regardless if she's the one for you. Maybe you'll get married and say, no, she wasn't the one for me. But you'll still be happy, because you're living with the most awesome person in the world. She's not exactly like you. Like, you wanted somebody who's a little more fun-loving, and she's, you know, a little bit more serious. Some people would use the word boring, right? But it doesn't matter, because, you know, she's always concerned with you, and she's really, you know, she's nice, and she's sensitive, and she knows what you need, and she tries to provide it, and she gives you a lot of respect, and she really, you know, she really values you and admires you. So all the things you possibly want out of a wife, she does for you. She knows the food you like, and she makes it. You know, she buys you clothes. Whatever you like, she does. And she might look at you, and she might say, no, this wasn't what I was looking for, but you know what? In the end, it's great to be married to you. Because you're just such a super guy. That's all. So it's really not a matter of who you marry. It doesn't matter who you marry. You can get along with anybody. Where do you see that? You see it in yeshiva. It doesn't matter who your roommate is. If you're a good guy, so it could be you'll say, listen, if I would have chosen a roommate, I would have chosen a guy down the hall. We have a lot more in common. I like sports, he likes sports. I like movies, he likes movies. You know, we come from a similar background. So I would have enjoyed being his roommate more. But at the end of the day, you're still going to be great friends with this roommate because he's your roommate. And you're always considerate of him. And he's always considerate of you. And you see the good in each other. And everybody has levels on which they can connect. So you get along with him perfectly fine. So that is how it goes with your wife. So the bottom line is don't worry about who you marry. Don't worry necessarily that you're making the wrong decision. And don't push off the decision too much. Like people I know in their 30s, 40s, and 50s who are pushing it off. Oh, she's not right, and she's not right, and she's not right. Somebody once went to the stipler and said, how come I haven't met my Bashir yet? And he said, you met your Bashir 5 years ago, but her nose was too big and you rejected her. So don't push it off for too long. You meet a nice girl, and you feel a chemistry, and you connect, and you come from similar backgrounds, and you want the same things out of life. Don't think about the 500 girls out there who would make you happier, because it's all a fantasy world. And you marry her, and you can make it work if you're a good person and she's a good person. Now it takes two to tango. If one of you is a rotten person, then you're in trouble. Yes, if you're both rotten people, then it's going to be a very, very good day for divorce lawyers, for the people in the community who like to talk. Everybody's going to have fun except for you and her. But if you're sincerely a good person, and you find out about that girl, that deep, mamish, ba'omek, ba'pinyus, she's pure, holy, wonderful, you have nothing to worry about. You're going to be happily married. Maybe there's somebody out there who, you know, I would have more to talk to, she'd be more interesting for me. Maybe, but it doesn't really matter, because you'll never know for sure. And she seems right. And you'll be happily married. Maybe with somebody else, maybe it could have been, you would have been a little bit happier. Okay. But that's not the way we live our life. Maybe. So all it really depends on is midos. And if you have good midos, you can get along with anybody in the world. If you're the right person, you can sit on an airplane. It doesn't matter who you're sitting next to. If you're the right, you can get along with anybody. You can become the person's friend. You can talk to the person. I remember I was once sitting on the airplane next to a girl named Dina. Dina was about 5 or 6 years old. And Dina was watching Harry Potter. She's watching a Harry Potter movie, and I made friends with Dina. Now, Harry Potter interests me as much as I care, like, what color socks Barack Obama's wearing today. He asked her when the last time you watched them. But I wanted to make Dina feel like I was her friend. So I said, oh, which Harry Potter do you like? Do you like number one or number two? And then she told me in this, and you make friends. Now, would I have wanted to marry Dina? Not necessarily. You know, there was an age gap and a culture. But you make friends. You make friends. She's sitting next to you on the airplane. So you make friends. You're nice to her. You don't... You know, you don't have to talk to her every second. You don't have to think like her in every way. But you make friends. So once you get married, say, listen, this is who I decided to marry. I thought she was the right one. My Rebbeim told me I heard nice things about her. I'm marrying her. And then you make it work. You don't look back. We don't believe in divorce. We don't believe... You're married to her forever. And your job now is to make her the happiest wife in the world. Period. Now, it could be that in some ways she's not going to be exactly what you were looking for, but it doesn't matter. And you're not going to make an issue of it. You're going to work through things. You're going to talk through things. You're going to make it work. But that is if you have good midos and she has good midos, and you'll never do anything to hurt her. So that is what Revolba said. Okay? So that goes about having good midos. Now, that is number one. However, let's say you don't have good midos. Or let's say she doesn't have good midos. Can you still be happily married? The answer is, of course. Why? Because there's a very interesting definition. I think it's the Maharal's. Of love. He said, what's love? Love is hosting somebody else in your heart. You have a heart filled with emotion. Are you able to take another human being and put that human being in your heart? Let's say you're able to do that for a moment. And let's say you have rotten midos. Okay? Does anybody here ever hit themselves? Starve themselves? Abuse themselves? No. Why not? Because you love yourself. You don't have to have good midos to be good to yourself. You don't say, oh, you see Shlomi over there? He is such a good person. Every day he gives himself a nap in the afternoon. He feeds himself three meals. And he buys himself really nice custom-made suits. You don't say that about Shlomi. Why? Because Shlomi loves himself. What's the big deal? The moment you love somebody and you view that person as an extension of yourself, then you don't need good midos anymore. All you need to do is be selfish. There's a story about Rav Meir Chadash, who was one of the great mashgichim. A mashgiach, contrary to popular opinion, is not only somebody who makes sure that they're not sticking unkosher food in the fancy kitchen, but a mashgiach is a spiritual advisor in yeshiva. So he was the latter, not the former. So there was once a boy who was debating between two girls. And one girl, they said, ooh, she's the biggest Baal Chesed and she's helping the whole world. And about the other girl, it was a possibility. They said that she's very selfish, very self-centered. So if Meir Chadash said, Dafka marry the self-centered one. He said, what's the Svara? The Svara is very simple. The Tzadekes is going to be running around helping the whole world, except for her husband. The self-centered one is going to see her husband as an extension of herself, and therefore her whole life is going to be in a very selfish way, devoted to her husband and her family. That's exactly what happened. The Tzadekes ended up getting married, and she was concerned with the whole world. And the self-centered one ended up with a very happy husband. And the Tzadekes ended up with a very... Now, you could have both. You could have a Tzadekes who's concerned with the world and also loves her husband. But I'm just showing you the idea of being a self-centered person could be something very positive. If you have an expanded self. Who should yourself ideally expand to? We may get a little afield now, far afield from the topic of Shalom Bayis. Who should the self expand to? Good. Good. Good.
Everyone around you.
The entire cosmos. Everything. Everything. You're concerned with everything. That's me. I'm concerned with the environment. I'm concerned with every human being. I'm concerned with every animal. I'm concerned, obviously, the Rabbanu Shel Olam. Rabbanu Shel Olam first and foremost. But the eye, you extend the eye. We're all connected. So if you see the world, and there are people who see the world, Cook used to see the world that way. He talks about it. If you see the world as an extension of yourself, then you're gonna be very much in love with the world. You see every individual as an extension of yourself. Like I know some people. Like you meet a Nativ guy, you're automatically connected. Why? Because you came from the same yeshiva, you're connected. But you meet a KBY guy. Sometimes I hear a guy. Who's your chavrusa in YU? It's a Shalavim guy. Like he's an outsider, so it doesn't really matter what his name is, does it? Right? But there's another way it should be. You can be connected to you can also be connected to a Shalavim guy and a KBY guy. Right? But we feel connected. Oh, so we come from the same background, the same school, you're connected. The ideal, it's very nice that your eye extends to all of Nativ Arya. that anybody who granted it, you have a kinship with that person. But ideally, the eye should extend to everybody. And the more you extend the eye there, so his problem becomes my problem. And for that, you don't need gemilos anymore. Then it's you. So if somebody else has a problem, you can't sleep at night. Does that mean you have good gemilos? No. It means that you can't sleep at night because you have a problem. It's a different way of looking at it. It's not I'm breaking myself anymore for the other person. It's just that I'm expanding myself. And therefore, then that's the definition. You host somebody else in your heart. So when you talk about your wife, the moment you get married, and you say to yourself, her success is my success. And her failure is my failure. And her happiness is my happiness. So you begin to see her as an extension of yourself. And then what happens? Something very, very strange. You begin to feel. You begin to feel her. Why does that make me happy? Because our lives were so... We feel ourselves so strongly, and we're so detached from other people very often that it's like... It's not like, but people are just... They're living in their own worlds, right? So you can, you know, hear that somebody died, hear that somebody's grandmother died, and say, who died? Somebody died. Who died? So-and-so's grandmother. So what happens if you don't know the person? You don't know the person. Let's say you knew her grandson, so then you feel a little bit more connected. But you go on with your day. You go on with your day. You can hear about the biggest tragedy. You hear what happened in Haiti. You can hear the worst things, and you can go on with your day. Why? Because you're not feeling them. You're feeling them. You know how to say cool in Hebrew? What? Cool with an R. Cool. Achzar. Thank you, Michael. Achzariyut. Do you know where Rav says achzariyut is? Ach, zar. You are only strange. The only way you can be cruel is if you're strange. If you're foreign. There's a foreign. I don't feel you. So therefore, how do you commit a crime? The only way you can possibly commit a crime is if you don't feel the other person. But if what they do is, I once heard to reform inmates, is that they show them movies, and they film the movie in a way that they have to identify with the victim. The moment you identify with the victim, then you can't commit another crime anymore, because then you're feeling their pain as you're stealing their money, as you're mugging them. The only way you can do it is if you cut yourself off and you don't feel the pain the other person is going through. So the goal of all of Ben Adonai Chaveru, but particularly with a wife, is to feel the other person. How does it make, you know, there's a story about where Moshe Lev Misasov tells, he said in his name, Chassidus Rebbe, that he once walked by a, he said, I learned what it meant to honor somebody, to love somebody, not honor, from a bar. I was walking by a bar one day, and I heard these two Russian drunks who were talking to each other. One guy says, Igor! Igor, you love me? Boris, of course I love you! He says, Igor! Igor, you love me? Boris! Of course I love you! So we go, what do I lack? What am I missing? I don't know. Well, then you don't love me. If you don't know what the other person is missing, then you don't love them. Because that means that you're not feeling the other person. You're not hosting them in your heart. You're not feeling them, and therefore you're not loving them. Because you're not connecting to them. You're a different person. She's her, and I'm me. And we're not the same person. It's a different... Meaning, obviously, we're different people, and we've talked about having boundaries. You have to be able to also separate. But to feel what she's feeling. If you can feel what another person feels, the problems are over. You're not going to say anything hurtful, because you're always going to think, how would I feel if somebody would say that to me? And when she's in pain, you're not going to... There's going to be no fights. All you're going to do is you're just going to be so busy focusing on her pain because you're feeling her pain. And all you're going to want to do is make it better. What's a fight? A fight is two people who aren't feeling the other person. They're only feeling themselves. And when you have two people who are only feeling them, of course they're going to fight. Because you're not concerned with me and I'm trying to get you to be concerned with me. And I'm not concerned with you and you're trying to get me to be concerned with you. And then all of a sudden you have this clash, this conflict. But the moment I'm feeling you and you're feeling me, so it's over, that doesn't even start. Because I'm feeling a little bit of pain, and immediately she says, oh, I'm so sorry you feel that way. What exactly was it? What exactly was it what I said? What exactly was it that happened? And she's feeling pain, And I said, oh boy, I see myself. I'm feeling. I'm with you. I'm 100% with you, and I'm so sorry it happened that way. And then it immediately ends. You know, Yossi, Rafi reminded me to say, there's a guy in Seattle. He actually is from now. He's a Baal Tshuva. So I heard, I didn't read it. I once saw it a little bit for a few minutes online, but frankly, it didn't look like a very exciting book to read, so I only read a few pages. But I heard that the reason I looked it up, because I heard he wrote this book, that he can predict with 94% certainty, accuracy, whether or not a couple is going to get divorced. What does it depend on? How they fight. How they disagree. The way two people disagree is going to determine whether or not they're married. Because every couple disagrees. And the question is how they do it. And the idea of, and that brings us to the next topic. And the next topic is, so first of all, we talked about feeling the other person. And now, the main, really, the ikkar of marriage is, obviously, how you speak to the other person. So there's a great story. There was a Rav in Panovich. His name was Rav Abba Berman. He's a Rav. We have his farm here in the library on the top shelf. I'm not so sure they're so much used, but you can look it up. You can learn them. He was a Rosh Yeshiva in Panovich. He was one of the top learners of the generation. He died a few years ago, if I'm not mistaken. So he used to love to tell the following story. Rav Chaim Brisker was once traveling with his son, Rav Velvel, and they were in a train station, and they got off the train. They were going to Warsaw, and all of a sudden there were lots of people and pushing and this, and they got separated. So all of a sudden, Rav Velvel, who was Rav Chaim's son, heard his father scream out to him. He didn't know where he was, but he heard his voice. And he screamed, Velvel, Velvel! Ich hab gefunden dem Wort! I found the word! What does it mean, I found the word? When you learn Gemara, you always have to define the term. That's what they always did in Brisk. What exactly, what is the definition of this concept, of this term? And therefore, if you can define something clearly, then you can also make a distinction between two concepts which seem very similar. So if you have two similar concepts and you have a contradiction between them, but you can clearly define each one, then it's not a question anymore. And that's what they used to do in Brisk, and they're always looking for the right word. I used to listen to recorded shiur of Rav Asher Ariel. Rav Asher Ariel gives shiur in the mirror. He has 600 boys in his shiur every day. So I would say he's the most popular daily shiur in the whole wide world. Yes, and for a good reason. He gives an amazing shiur. So sometimes, I remember once when I was listening to shiur, he wanted to say something, he wanted to explain something, but he had it to say, hey, the shiur was in Hebrew, but he had to say it in Yiddish. Because that's how we heard it from his rabbein, we heard it from their rabbein. Because it's only going to be exactly that in Yiddish and in no other language. So you have to say it in order to, sometimes the same exact thing that you say, but you use a slightly different word, it makes all the difference. If you ever are, just how you feel when people say different things, ask yourself, how does this make me feel? How does this make me feel? How does this make me feel? Sometimes, even though the person is saying the exact same thing, but two different words, okay, are going to make you feel two completely different ways, even though the words might even be synonymous. You can look up the dictionary, they're synonyms. But to know exactly the word to say. So Rav Abba used to stutter terribly. So he'd give a shiur, and a lot of times the word wouldn't come to him. So even though he's a big genius in Gemara, he wasn't such a great speaker. So sometimes he'd be in front of dozens of people, maybe hundreds of people, and he would sit there for 20 minutes. He would sit there really for long periods of time, just trying to get that right word. Trying to get, how exactly should I say this? So that really applies to everything we do in life. Any time you're communicating with another person, and particularly with your wife, you have to think before, how exactly should I, what is the exact word that I should use? Because one misusage of a word, and then it's all over. You hurt the person's feelings. And the right word in the right time in the right place, and you made the person feel good. But you have to know how the usage of language, and that's what, when you're learning, you're very, very careful about that, about how, what word should be used to describe this term, and to describe the concept, to define the concept. And also, when you're having communication with somebody, you have to think of words. And the way to do that is, a lot of times, to see, so how does that make me feel? How does that make me feel? Or knowing that person, sometimes different words make different people feel different ways. A lot of times a word which is good for me isn't good for the other person. So you see in the past, oh, I've used that word, and that word makes her feel great. And I've used that word, and every time I say that, I all of a sudden see her getting nervous. You know, there's sometimes people use a certain phrase, ugh, that makes me crazy. So a lot of people aren't even paying attention. What did I say? I didn't say anything. When it really seems, you say to somebody, oh, I told my wife this and this, some innocuous statement, and she got so offended. She got so offended. There's no, you know, when you talk about feelings, you're not a baal habayis over someone else's feelings. If something makes a person feel a certain way, it's not right or wrong. A lot of times couples have these arguments. You shouldn't feel that way. You shouldn't feel. This is the way it makes me feel. This is the way it makes me feel. And if I'm in pain, then you're in pain. So therefore, you always have to see, oh, this word didn't work, and you learn by trial and error. This word didn't work. So next time I'll try a different word. You know, I'll turn a different phrase. I'll try a different sentence, and I'll see how that goes. And that's really the avoda in life, and it's an avoda. It's an avoda to really think before you speak. The reason I was listening to somebody who was saying how he went on a tainus dibur. So what happens when you go on a tainus dibur? What? You don't speak. So when you don't speak, a lot of times you're going to speak, but then you don't, so you think about what you're going to say. In other words, it makes you think before you speak. So thinking before you speak is something very, very big. So one thing that to remember for later is that you might think what you're saying is fine and it's really not a big deal, but if you think about it, it's going to make it can either make or break. So I talked before, you were having an argument. Okay? So just to use a very crude example. Okay, let's say your wife is makes a lot of noise in the morning. You're still sleeping. You know, she likes to get up and down for seeking, but you like to catch the 9:30 minyan. Okay, it's a Sunday morning, and you're catching the 9:30 minyan in shul. So she's rustling around with papers. She makes noise, and she wakes you up. There are two ways of saying it. I mean, there are many ways. But one example would be, why do you have to make so much noise every morning? Anytime I say why did you, it's always almost always a criticism. Why did you? And we have a rule in the Ehrman Incorporated that we don't criticize our wives. So if you keep our rule, then you're gonna have a happy marriage. Why are you making so much noise? Why? I told you so many times. It's so annoying. I can't sleep. Why do you wait? Why are you sensitive to my needs? How come you don't care? That's one way. What's the other way? Oh, darling, you know, I'm so tired on Sunday mornings. It's so hard for me. You know, I work hard all week, and I stay up late. Motzei Shabbos, we have Malav and Malka, and they're telling Sipuri at Tzaddikim. And in order for me to properly function on Sunday, you know, I take the family out, and we go driving. You know, it's really important for me to sleep. So, is there some way that maybe you can do this after I wake up? By the way, you're going to get the same result. The same result of, not only get the same result, you're going to get 100 times better result. Because there's not a woman on earth who, if you say the first thing to you, she's going to say, oh honey, I'm so sorry, I'll try to be better next time. That's just not, maybe there are women like that, but I've never heard of any. Yes? That's not the way they are, because what happens when we're attacked?
We attack back.
So attacking never helps. Attacking language never helps, and people are always attacking each other. Couples always attack each other. It was, oh, why did I say, why did you do that? Again, why did you do that is immediately an attack. And people always say that to each other. People say worse. So nobody ever responds well to an attack. Ah, you have a goal, you want to achieve a goal. So think, what words can I say that will help me achieve my goal? So again, for that, you don't even need good mitos. You know why you don't need good mitos? Because you can be, not only don't you need good mitos, you don't even have to have her as a guest in your heart. All you have to do is care about yourself. And if you really, really love yourself very much, then you're only going to say nice things to her, because then she's going to want to do everything. I'm not saying you should be that way. Chas v'shalom. In a million years, you shouldn't want to be that way. But even saying, even if you take the worst, most corrupt person, but the only way you can get something out of somebody is if you say the right words. You don't do it in an attacking way. You give the person the option of not doing it. You know, you say, you know, listen, if this is the only time in the morning for you to do what you have to do and rustle the papers and make the noise, then okay, you know, and then, you know, definitely you come first. But if possibly you can do it afterwards or before the previous night, that would help me a lot. I'd really, really appreciate that. And then when she does it, you shower her with compliments. So it's very, very simple, and everybody knows it intuitively, but couples just don't do it. So that is words. Words are very important. There's another topic which we have about 5 minutes for, and that is very big in marriage, and that is called, and this relates back really to everything I want to talk about, which is kavod, and that is control. Control. So I had a ma'aseh shahaya today, just that I heard today. Somebody comes and told me the following story. A boy and a girl are going out, and they've been going out for a year and a half. And they really, really like each other, and they want to get married eventually. The only problem is, they're both shana aleph. It happens. So what happens? The boy gets a phone call from his mother, and his mother says, you're not allowed to talk to her again until you leave Israel. That's what she said. And if you talk to her again, I'm taking you home. That's what she said. Now, why did she say that? Nobody knows. Nobody knows. Not for religion. She's not just tzedekis, the mother. That's what I was telling her. Is she still religious? She doesn't want her son talking to girls? No, it didn't bother her the last year and a half. But all of a sudden, now that's what she decided. And she said, and if you do it again, I'm taking you home. What's that called? That's called control. Now, in my experience, I have to tell you something. I don't want to say most, but it happens to be true. Most parents try to control their children. What does it mean, first of all, not to control? Not to control means you go to your child, 18, 19, 20 years old, you say, listen, I love you very much, but it's your life, and you have to make your own decisions. I'm going to encourage you to make the right decision, and I'd like to discuss it with you. And if you choose otherwise, that's your option. I don't necessarily have to support it. Say a boy wants to come back to yeshiva. He wants to come back, Shana Gimel, Rechmana Litzlan. Hashem should save us in such a fate. Yeah? And his parents don't want to let him. His parents don't want to do it. They think it's bad for him. So what does a healthy parent do? A healthy parent says, I once had a roommate like this. They didn't make a fight out of it. They said, we don't want you to come and learn. So if you do it, we won't pay for it. But, you know, we still love you. You're still our son. And that's your choice. But we just can't support something that we think is going to be harmful to you. I think that's completely acceptable. What do other people do? They scream. They shout. They threaten. And that's control. And now the parents are going to say, oh, okay, he's only 18. He's only 19. He's only 20. They do it when he's 21. They do it when he's 22. They do it when he's 26. They do it when he's 28. And that's called control. So what does this mother want? This mother wants control. So she doesn't want, for whatever her reasons are, she won't even talk to anybody about it. She won't even listen. And the girl told me her mother wanted to talk to her, and she said, what do you know? You have less life experience than me. So we learn from there that if somebody has less life experience, then there's nothing at all they can teach you. Of course, the rabbi said the opposite, but she doesn't want to hear from anybody. Why? Because if she hears somebody else's opinion, that's not going to help her control her son. So she wants to control. Now, I'm not talking about whether they should be going out or they shouldn't be going out. That's irrelevant to the discussion. Although, I have an opinion on that, too. But what is relevant might surprise you also. What is relevant to the discussion is it infuriates me. It infuriates me that a parent tries to control a kid. And the boy's crying. He's saying, no, mom, I love her. I want to get married. Da-da. And the girl's crying. And her parents are upset. And everybody's upset. But she wants something. And she's going to get it at all costs. And then she does the old-fashioned threatening. Okay? Now, it happens to be that when a child is 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, sometimes you have to force them to do things. But even then, it's not so nice to do it. Sometimes you have to control, but not do it in a controlling way. If, for example, you can say to a child won't go to school. You can say, you don't have to go to school. But if you don't go to school, then you also don't have rights in this house. You don't get to use the computer. You know, you don't get dessert. You don't get, you know, the new shoes that you wanted. You don't get this. You don't get that. When the family goes on vacation, you stay. You can say that because the kid has the option. And obviously, they're going to realize, eventually they're going to go with you. But here, first of all, you're talking about somebody who's a lot older. And here, there's not even a choice. And they do it, and I see parents doing it to kids, but that's not what my topic is, because who's going to listen to Ali or me when I say parents shouldn't control their kids? Very rarely do I meet a parent like that. Everybody's trying to a certain extent. I have a goal for my child, I have a road for him to follow, and he's going to follow that path. And if he doesn't follow that path, then I'm going to make him follow the path. Okay, it doesn't... In the end, it doesn't make the parents closer to the kids, and in the end, it doesn't help society. People have to learn how to make their own decisions, very sad. But what happens in marriage? What happens in marriage is that very often you have husbands control wives, and wives control husbands. Now, what's the problem with that? The problem with that is, as opposed to parents, your parents you always keep as your parents. But when it comes to kids, when it comes to spouses, all it does is build up anger. And they get angry. But you really want her to act a certain way, so you're going to make sure she does. And you're going to take away, you know, husbands, they take away credit cards, or they threaten her with this, they threaten her with that, or they scream, or they shout, or they do all these things. So you guys are probably looking at me, oh, how can this be? But it happens all the time. And I don't want to say it's the number one rule, but I would definitely put it in the top five. Top five, let the other person be. That's what I learned myself, Baruch Hashem, after a few years. I also have my own idea, my own way of doing things. The other person is an adult. Whatever they decide to do is fine. Now you can discuss it. You can talk about it, but ultimately, it's their decision. And it's showing the other person, which is the most important thing, that's the number one on the list, it's showing the other person respect. I respect you enough to make the right decisions, and then you'll find something very surprising. But the moment you do that, the person's going to want to please you. Nobody likes to be controlled, and it makes everybody angry. And by the way, I see it the other way also. I'm not sure which way more. I think it's more wives controlling husbands than husbands controlling wives, I think. That's without ever having done statistics or anything like that. But women have their own way of getting their way. They're not as strong necessarily. They don't control the money. But they try. They want their husband to be a certain way. So they control. And it could even be for something positive. They want him to go learn. So, you know, they threaten him. Unless, you know, he does, you know, unless he goes and learns, you know, she's going to be angry at him. She's going to scream at him. You know, she's not going to, you know, she's not making him dinner. Whatever it may be. Or husbands is a common one in today's world. A wife says she's not going to make food. Not going to make food. She wants to get something out of her husband. It's an old-fashioned trick. So she doesn't go, and then you know, you don't have to be a you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure out what doesn't result if she doesn't go to mikveh. So that, oh, then the guy wants to give in, so he goes. So you have a problem, you have an issue, you discuss it, and then ultimately, if it's your issue, then you have every right to do what you want to do. She can't control you if you don't want to learn. If you want to walk down the street, excuse me, you want to walk down the street without a yarmulke, it's your choice. It's your choice, and you're allowed to make that choice for yourself. She has a choice. Maybe she doesn't want to be married to a guy who doesn't wear a yarmulke. Peseder, that's her choice. She could say, listen, I love you very much. You could do whatever you want, but that's not who I wanted to marry. I'm trying to... There are ways you can say something and do things, and you're not controlling. You really, I'm leaving it up to you, but then I may have to make my own decision. You're allowed to make your own decisions, but you're not trying to control. You see the difference? When a parent calls up and says, you must break up with that girl, and if you don't break up with that girl, I'm taking you home. So that's control. Another type of mother can say, listen, you're going out with this girl. I have my reasons. I'm very, very upset about the relationship. I strongly encourage you not to, what's it called? And I'm only giving you spending money. I know you're going to spend it on the girl. I'm only giving you spending money on condition that you don't spend it on the girl. Or whatever it is. And in that way, you're not controlling. You're telling your opinion, and you don't have to support the relationship. But you're not trying to make them do something specific. So you have a choice. You decide one day you have a mishigas in your head. You don't like walking down the street with a yarmulke. So you discuss it. She tells you how much it means to her and this and that. Ultimately, it's your decision. And she has her choice of where she wants to go and who she wants to be friends with and what she wants to do. You talk about it. And then it's her decision. And then if there's something in between the two of you, so you learn how to talk about it. Everybody's respectful. You listen to the other person's opinion. And then you come to some sort of decision. And if you can't, you go to a third party. But just not to control. Not to control. Every year I see the yeshiva. I don't know what to do about it anymore. I want to sit down with all the parents and say, leave your kid alone. Let your kid be. Sometimes the kid can be 23, 24, 25. They make him go to medical school. They make him, he's going out with a girl they don't want to marry. They make him break up the relationship. They make him, like, let the person be. I know a guy who's into his 50s, he didn't get married. Because every time his mother, just break up with this girl. No, don't go out with this girl. Don't go out with that girl. So that's not the way to build a good marriage, to build a happy marriage. So just to summarize, first of all of our avoda of midos is an avoda for our marriage. Number two, he said if you have good midos, then you can be married to anybody because you have good midos and she has good midos. Number three, we said you don't even need good midos because just you see her as an extension of yourself, and therefore everything you do for yourself, you'd automatically do for her. And then we talk about when you argue, always to argue civilly, always to think of the words you're going to use, to always try to find the right word, because a word can make or break. Mavis b'chaim b'yad alashon, the rabbi said, the life and death is in the hands of your tongue. So to be very, very careful with what you say, and also how you say it. Also the tone of voice is very, very important. And not controlling, just not to control her, not to control your friends. And in that schus and mitzvah Hashem, we'll have happy homes. Nice.